your job is on the line. So this is the origin of the winning at all cost situation we have in this country. So let's wrap it up in a bow, Benny. Coaching development. Okay, coaching development. It's the other piece that you just said. When you happen to win a game or two games or three games or have a string of good games, that gives the coach a runway, a pressure release valve to further their art and further the development of their players and further the development of their team and further their own coaching development. Because now you can at least relax and say, okay, fuck, I can now focus on doing the rondos properly. I can now focus on, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have the all these distractions in play. So huge, huge component, Benny. I'm glad you brought it up. Coaching development requires you to win, unfortunately. You can't be losing all the time. Otherwise, you're never going to develop as a coach. Hey, this is episode 403 of the 343 podcast. In the last episode, we started talking a little bit about coaching development because here in the US, we talk a lot about player development, but not so much about coaching development. This is a part two of coaching development. So if you're a coach out there and you want to learn what it takes to improve yourself, but like really improve yourself, because it's not just a matter of time. It's a matter of time and also doing the right things and understanding the ecosystem that is around you. So for example, we understand there's so much pressure to win at all costs, they say, but it's not your fault. We understand. We've been coaching for 2 decades now. And if we combine the experience of all of us here at 343, even longer than that. So we get where you're coming from. We get the pressures. And you know what? Honest to God truth, even if you're not a coach, you need to listen to this episode because you need to stop regurgitating all the stuff that is told to you and fed to you in the media and generate some level of immunity, some level of resistance to the misinformation that's out there, to the disinformation that's out there. We give it to you straight here. So I hope you enjoy this episode. There's a ton of gold nuggets here. And again, I have to emphasize and repeat, this is stuff that you're not going to get out there in the mainstream. The mainstream does not tell you these angles because one, they may not know it. And two, even if they do know it, they can't tell you because the incentives are such that they don't want to tell you. It's bad for them to tell you. Being that this episode is about coaching development, coaches, what the hell are you doing? Get your asses over to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium education programs for you there, multi-year programs. You get to start at the base level and work your way up. Launched in 2014 and still going strong to today, thousands of coaches have gone through the program and thousands of coaches have wrote into me with testimonials of their successes, team successes, coaching successes, and player trajectory successes, be it at the recreational level, be it at the mid-range intermediate level, or being at the top elite levels of youth soccer, and even some professionals are in the program as well. It is based on the pioneering work of Brian Kleiben, who has decades worth of coaching experience here in the American soccer environment, a unique environment, as you all know, at all the levels, all the age groups, both genders. And you get to see him working in his element, in his art. It is not scripted in any way, shape, or form. You actually get to see him, witness him, listen to him as he executes the methodology with his actual teams and actual players. Coaches, do yourself a favor. Head on over again to 343coaching.com. Sign up right away. And parents, you are the coaches off of the field. So you need to be well-versed in things of soccer as well if you want your kids to actually fulfill their quote-unquote potential. For you, you go to 343masterclass.com. Learn to develop a discerning eye, a better discerning eye for what the heck is happening here in the American soccer landscape. What should your player be doing at home? What sort of individual activities could they be doing? How should they be kicking a ball against the wall? What other things should they be doing in order to develop things that you're not going to get in your club environment, things that you don't get in the team training environment? And look, I know it's complicated. You're always looking around, what is best for my son? What is best for my daughter? Should I go with this coach? Should I go with that coach? Should I go with this team, with that team, with this club, with that club? And ultimately, especially if your kid is very, very young, a lot of the decision rides on your shoulders. So please head on over to 343masterclass.com. And over the course of time, you're going to develop your discerning eye for what is a better way of guiding your kid. Last but certainly not least, for those coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode. Here we go.
if you're okay with it, Gary, I would like to do a part two, kind of pick up where we left off last week in terms of coaching development. How does a coach get better as a coach, right? And we talk a lot about player development, but this is a topic that doesn't really get brought up too much. But before we start, Gary, I want to say I'm very happy today. Finally got a win with my team. So for a little context, about maybe 2 months ago, I took over a team in the club, one of the top teams, and gave the whole spiel to the parents, right? This is how we're going to play, possession shot soccer, rondos building out of the back. And they were really open to it, really receptive, right? But we're playing in the EA League, which is fairly competitive. The first six games, I think we had one win and five losses in a row, right? But every single game, Gary, dominating possession, creating chances. But you start hearing, you know, little whispers on the sideline and, you know, what are we doing? Or what is Coach Benny doing? Does he even know what he's doing, right? And you just feel it, right? Like after a win, the parents will come up to you and say, like, oh, you're a great game, coach. But after the losses, it's like everybody just walks away and you start hearing little things, right? So the pressure starts building and it's like, fuck, dude. But today it felt like everything came together, man. And the boys, super calm on the ball, building out of the back, created plenty of chances. We ended up winning 3-2. But it's just a good feeling as a coach. And I don't know, I feel like it kind of buys me more freedom to continue to do what it is, right? Because if you go the whole season without winning, right, the parents start wondering, like, oh, is this really the best system for my son to be playing in? But now with the win, it's like, all right, now I have more time to continue doing what we're doing. And I think the parents notice it too, man. Like, you can tell the difference from when they first started playing with me until now. It's a massive difference. It's a good feeling.
Well, congratulations, man.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. I feel like a lot of coaches may be in that situation too, where they feel the pressure to win and maybe, you know, they do dominate possession. But again, we've talked about this many times. Other teams might have three or four good players and, you know, you don't get the results that you want. And, bro, people care about winning. The parents care about winning. The club cares about winning. I think it just buys you a little bit more freedom, you know, when you do start putting together the wins.
Yeah. So, okay, let's put it into the context of coaching development, right? Part two. Part one, for everybody who didn't listen to it, I would encourage you to go and check that one out. It was episode 402, if I'm correct, Benny. It was the one prior to this one. So in the context of coaching development, you're absolutely right. I've written about this for a very long time, for over a decade, that winning matters a lot. And now let's unpack that, okay? Because unfortunately, in the United States, winning has become a bad word. And that's two or three episodes in and of itself. But for our purposes here, the ultimate culprit for the win-at-all-cost culture, the finger has always been pointed at the coach. It's the coach's fault. It's all the coaches, not just one individual coach. It's all the coaches in America. They are the win-at-all-cost culprits because they have big egos and they want to live vicariously through the kids and their teams. And it's all about them. And it's not about the individual player development, blah, 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 blah. And what you just finished describing, Benny, is in general the truth, which it doesn't really originate from the coach. The ultimate culprit, if we really want to talk about it, is since there's no promotion relegation at the professional level and MLS is a monopoly, all the youth clubs here, to stay in business, first off, they can't have a first team because there's no point of having a first team without promotion and relegation at the pro level. So they remain youth clubs alone. And then for them to survive as a business and operate as a business, not even a profitable business. Most of these are nonprofit organizations that barely make ends meet. And if they do have an excess, you know, a quote unquote profit, so to speak, where they're positive on the balance sheet, it's not that much that they're positive on the balance sheet. And I know this because I've seen the balance sheet. And for all of you folks out there who haven't had the opportunity to work on a board of directors at a youth club or have that sort of visibility, since they're nonprofit organizations, Benny, they can go and it's public record. Just type in the youth club that you're interested in at the .gov, I forget what website it is, and you can pull up their tax returns. So you can see their balance sheets. I'm getting to your point, Ben. Let me lay out the theater here or the backdrop. So how do these clubs survive? They have to incorporate pay to play because they need revenue. How are they going to pay for fields? How are they going to pay for coaches? How are they going to pay for leagues? How are they going to pay for ref fees? How are they going to pay? And the list goes on and on and on of the expense side of the equations. How are you going to pay for uniforms? How are you going to pay for balls, equipment, everything? And so that then trickles down to the parents. So since the parents have to pay, and sometimes they pay thousands of dollars per season for this, that's usually the norm, they feel that they need a return on their investment. And the only way that they know how to measure a return on their investment is on the obvious metric of the win-loss column. Oh, if the team is winning, that must mean, at least in some significant way, that the coach that my kid plays for knows what they're doing, okay? And if there's too many losses or you're perpetually losing all these games, then that must mean the coach doesn't know what he's doing. And so what does that create? That creates a dynamic where you, Benny, and other youth coaches, all the youth coaches across the country, feel that pressure either directly or implicitly with what I just described to win. That is why you have this insane pressure to win. And that is why so few coaches, it is an outrageous, rare exception of coach that takes on a new team like you did and says, okay, we're going to deploy a proper development trajectory for the team, which is a proper development trajectory for the individual players. The wins might not come as quickly as they would come if I just did what everybody does, right? Which is launch it up front and hopefully something good happens to the man child or whatever. And so you start losing a lot of games because it takes time. A proper methodology takes time to grab hold. And you experience what you experience, Benny. You lost a bunch of games in the beginning and you start hearing whispers and murmurs of like parents, and there might be a parent revolt. And you know, the first thing that they'll probably do is form a coalition of parents, a political block, you know, so to speak. And they might approach you at some point, or they might not approach you. They might go to the director of coaches or the technical director or whoever is the authority at the club to say, hey, man, look, I don't know about this Benny guy. Like, look at the record. Like, we've only won one of the six games. Like, let's be real. I don't know if my son should be playing here anymore. You know, we're thinking about leaving. And what does the director of coaching do, or the club president or whatever? They probably, if they don't have your back, Ben, you're in massive trouble. Your job is on the line. So this is the origin of the winning at all cost situation we have in this country. It's not you. So let's wrap it up in a bow, Benny. Coaching development, okay? Coaching development. It's the other piece that you just said. When you happen to win a game or two games or three games or have a string of good games, that gives the coach a runway, right? A pressure release valve to further their art and further the development of their players and further the development of their team and further their own coaching development. Because now you can at least relax and say, okay, fuck, I can now focus on doing the rondos properly. I can now focus on, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have all these distractions in play. So huge, huge component, Benny. I'm glad you brought it up. Coaching development requires you to win, unfortunately. You can't be losing all the time. Otherwise, you're never going to develop as a coach.
Yeah, Gary. And like you said, the process takes time, right? When I had this meeting, we were maybe four games into the season with one win and three losses. And that was one of the questions of the parents. It's like, oh, well, Benny, like, all this sounds great, you know, but how long is it going to take for us to start winning? I'm like, dude, I mean, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen, you know. Like, look, every game that we play, we're going to compete and be as competitive as possible, but we want to play the right way. We want to set your kids up for long-term success. And Gary, we do have those man-child type players where we could just launch it up and we probably would have won more games this season, but I don't think the kids are going to really benefit from that, if you know what I mean. And the other thing too, Gary, that came to my mind when you brought up pay to play, other teams that I've had in the past, Gary, I haven't been as successful with them because of the pressure to play all the kids, right? For example, my my starting 11, great players. If you leave them in the whole game until they need a sub right, we probably could have won. But when you have to rotate in the bottom four on the roster, the bottom five, and things fall apart, those moments matter. Like, one player can change the game. And so because as a coach, you feel that pressure and you know, hey, look, this parent is paying $3,000 for their kid to be here. They just drove to San Bernardino an hour away on a Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Like, how am I going to justify not playing their kid right now, you know? And then again, it's like, oh, well, we're not winning. Maybe I should take my son or daughter somewhere else. So I think coaches feel all types of pressure from all different angles, Gary.
Yeah. A few thoughts that I'm writing down here. The first thought is it's really weird. And I'll admit, sometimes frustrating at times, where you hear the loudest voices, the largest advocates of, oh, winning shouldn't matter at the youth level, you know, and let the kids play. It's not about winning. It doesn't matter in the long run anyways, if you have a U12 or a U10 or a U14 team, nobody remembers the trophies you won back then, you know, and that's not going to get the kids to college or to being a professional winning, blah, 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 blah. Those same folks will eventually, you know, stab the coach in the back if he's not winning. No, I'm serious. And the same people who are saying, oh, all the players should play, you know, we shouldn't be benching players when they're 12 years old or 11. It should be one big, happy, equitable family, equal playing time, you know what I mean, guys. Okay. I know it's not equal playing time, but you get what I'm saying. Everybody should play. Now MLS has this new initiative, right? Every player in an MLS Next should play at least a third of a game. And my point. All the parents who advocate for that, they'll stab you in the back if you're not winning at some point. And if you're playing the scrubs too much, and they won't tell you, oh, it's because you played Johnny and Cruz and Sebastian and they're the worst on the team. And that's why we're losing. You know, that's why we're upset and we're leaving. They won't tell you that's the reason, but that's the reason. It's because you aren't winning. The other thought that came to mind, Ben, is even if you're not in a pay to play situation, such as at an MLS franchise, right? You have an MLS franchise academy team. We still have a massive problem there too, because having no pressure to win, where winning doesn't matter at all, is also a massive issue, because then the coaches themselves and the organization itself as a whole doesn't give a shit about, the sport doesn't become the priority, Ben. I put it to you that way. You can come dead last. It doesn't matter. It's all good. So long as we don't have any public perception problems or something of that nature, it's all good. And what public perception problems actually are there if the Philadelphia Union U15s came in last place? Or these? Nobody cares. That's not a public relations issue. Nobody cares. Because you have a monopoly, and anybody that's in the Philadelphia area or whatever, in the Kansas City area or in the LA area, any of the good players, they want to go there anyway. They don't care. The parents don't care if you came in last place because they want to be at an MLS franchise. You know, it's better than not being an MLS franchise. So that's also tremendously damaging to player development, to coaching development.
Right. So Gary, we're along the lines of coaching development. I think it was on the last episode or another one that somebody had commented on her page. They want to implement this possession-based system, but they don't have the support of the club, right? Like the DOC came to him and said, like, hey, no, you shouldn't be doing rondos. This is what you should be doing for that coach, right? And again, maybe this is the only club in his area and his only opportunity. Should he get up and leave and try and find somewhere else, or should he just stick to what he's doing? Because again, if you don't have the support of your DOC and the president of the club, I mean, you can get axed, bro. You can get fired. You know, what does a guy like that do? And even myself, Gary, like the pressure of winning, I've found myself like on the way to training, it's like, fuck, should I do rondos again today? Like, even though I know that it's the right thing to do, but again, you have to have that perception for the parents. You know, how does this coach stick to his belief and its methodology in the pressure of winning?
$1 million question, isn't it, Benny? $1 million question, because And let's extend this beyond soccer. This happens everywhere in all domains. This is why politics exists. This is why you cannot escape politics, because it's all relationship dynamics. You have to assess your context. You have to assess the situation. You have to assess the relationship dynamics in your situation. And hopefully you're a decent judge of it, because it's very difficult to see what it is that you can and cannot do. Like, you have to be able to discern, where is the line here, really? So if it's a hard line, then you're just going to have to bow down and obey whoever your bosses are. You just have to. If in your estimation, it's a little bit more fuzzy than that, not so black and white, then you don't completely bow down, but you have to give a little, you have to give a little rope, you know, so you don't hang yourself. Maybe you do some rondos, and maybe you do, 80 or 70% of the stuff that the DOC or the club wants you to do. Honestly, I don't even know what they would want you to do, because if it's not like a methodology like we've always described with rondos, et cetera, like how do you actually train a team? I'm actually curious, like, what do you actually do in a training session? Because to me, it seems all like random chaos at that point. But my point here is you have to play the political game if you want to preserve your job and if you want to give yourself a longer runway to hopefully, the end goal would be to hopefully increase that percentage level that you do your own thing over the course of time, right? So maybe you do 20% your own thing and 80% theirs, and then maybe you win and you're doing good and nobody's on your back, and you up that 20% to 30%, and then you up it to 40%, and then you up it to 50%. And then by the time, a year, two or three have gone by, you're 100% in on your own methodology, and the DOC backs you now and the parents back you. But that's the optimum storyline. Yes, obviously reality is more difficult than that. Or if you don't depend on this as a serious thing for your income, for your livelihood, then the calculus changes a little bit, right? You might say, well, fuck you, I'm doing my shit anyway. And if you want to get rid of me, fine, you get rid of me, no problem at all. There's other things you can do, hopefully you're networking and other people like you and other clubs like you and other DOCs like you. And maybe you can kind of have a plan B, like, you want to get rid of me? I'll just go work over here. Fuck you, I'll do my own thing. So I don't have an answer that covers everything, but I think politics matters and you have to judge the situation and act accordingly. And I don't know how to teach that.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating, man. You have to do the dance and play the political game. Otherwise your livelihood is on the line, dude. And for the guy that commented, like, maybe he doesn't have another club near him or another opportunity. Maybe this is the only club giving him a chance. And all right, you got to basically bow down to the man and do what they say. But I like your answer of like increasing it 20%, right? If you start putting together some wins. But here's the problem. You start putting together wins and the DOC is now like, see, like, this is the methodology like that you should have been using, our methodology, not these rondos or possession-based system, So it's a tough line to balance, bro.
That's assuming the DOC is there at all your training sessions and like actually knows what you're doing, right? Which is usually never the case.
Yeah, never the case, bro. No, I'm lucky, Gary, that our DOC, he actually attended one of the 343 summits in Vegas, And not like he's like coming in and saying, hey, Benny, this is exactly the sessions you need to run. They give me full freedom. And again, bro, they have my back, right? I mentioned in the beginning that I started hearing murmurs and whispers, but, the DOC and even the club president came to me and said, keep doing what you're doing and we have your back no matter what. So I'm lucky to be in that environment. I know not everybody is the same though, Gary.
Yeah. Well, it has a lot to do with your reputation and number of years in the game and experience and stuff, because the longer you're around and the bigger your reputation and credibility, obviously the higher probability that they're going to have your back, because you're a more valuable asset than a parent or three parents or five parents saying, I'm taking my kid elsewhere, Okay, well, fuck you. I care about Benny more. I'd rather have my coach, than you five fuckers who are complaining.
Yeah, exactly. So Gary, I recently had a chance to observe a new coach. You remember the John Doe coach that I gave you last time? Like a new young coach coming out of college or whatever. I recently observed him during a game, right? He's within our club, brand new to coaching, like just starting. Really good guy, you know, but the level of coaching was shocking, Gary. And he was coaching like one of the youngest team in the club. So they're maybe 7 years old, but the team is like dominating every single game, right? Just because they have athletic kids and kids that can actually shoot, and it makes a difference at that age. But from what I noticed with him, like, I'm sure he was a great player in the past, but it didn't translate to the way that he was coaching. Like, for example, at halftime, these are literally his words or his only comments, Gary. Like, the other team sucks. Like, you guys score 10 goals a game. Like, what are we doing? You know, wake up. There wasn't any type of coaching or direction or, hey, this is what we need to be doing. So how can you start finding the words, Gary, to give the team? How can you start giving better instructions? Because, again, to translate it from being a player to becoming a coach, it's two completely different things. And I felt bad for him, man. Like, after the game, I talked to him and said, like, hey, maybe give the kids a little bit more instruction. That way they go out in the second half knowing what you want for them, instead of saying, oh, the other team sucks. Like, why aren't you guys winning? You know? And again, he's a good kid. He didn't know that what he was saying probably wasn't the best, but how can we help a coach like that, Gary, that's just starting out and doesn't really know where to start in terms of coaching points and what he should be saying at halftime, before the game, after the game?
First things first, it's understandable. When you first get a brand new job, you just don't know what you're doing. It's right. As simple as that. And it just comes with experience, but how do we accelerate you along that experience path, such that when you do communicate, you're also saying the right things, right? Because some people have 5, 10, 15, 30 years of coaching experience, and they're very fluid and they can flow with their conversations and their halftime speeches or the pre or post. But what it is that they're saying might be really bad, nonsensical, stupid, substandard, non-gold standard stuff. Okay, so even somebody with 20 years experience could be shocking, Benny, but they flow. I would suggest step one is probably, you know, try to take the time, and hopefully you're lucky enough where you can go and observe another coach who is more experienced than you, and hopefully experience in a methodology that you want to be good at. Okay, so this guy should come to your games and listen to your pregame and listen to your halftime speeches and listen to your postgame chats, departing words, for a whole season, for a long time, you know, as long as the schedules don't conflict. And if you can do that with one coach, awesome. If you can do it with two coaches, even better. And then take notes while you're there, because if you're not taking notes, you're going to forget a whole bunch of stuff. And if you can, and if the coach allows it, even record it. Record it, right? So you can play it back to yourself. And then lastly, and people might laugh at this, or relatedly, I should say, people might laugh at this, but do the speeches on your own. Yeah, so simulate situations. So simulate to yourself at home when you're alone, say, okay, let's say my team is losing 1-0 and the other team is better and they have a man child or whatever. Okay, what do I want to tell my players? And then actually verbalize it and rehearse it over and over and over again. And give yourself another situation. What if you're up 2-0 or 1-0 at halftime, but it's not going well and you're scared of certain things, or it is going well, what do you tell them? So write out your speech or generate a speech and then practice it on your own. Again, people might think I'm crazy, but I'm not crazy. People do this all the time. When you listen to, and I'm not a big advocate of TED Talks anymore. It used to be great. Now it's just a bunch of nonsense. They rehearse this stuff. Steve Jobs would rehearse his keynote addresses. I, when I was a student in physics and mathematics, when I was preparing for exams or just learning things, I would go to classrooms, empty classrooms at 2 in the morning, 1 in the morning, 11 p.m., 3 a.m., whatever. And I would give lectures to an empty classroom, and I would simulate imaginary students in the audience grilling me with questions. Oh, well, hold on, Gary, what is that you just did there? Why are you able to do that? How are you able to assume those sorts of things? And be like, oh, that's a good question. And I would just literally cuckoo, right? But have a whole conversation with myself in an empty classroom. So by the time I became an actual instructor in physics at the university level, I'm not shy. I'm not intimidated. I can flow with it, and you get better with time. So I think those two things are important, Ben. I don't know if you agree with that or if you have other thoughts. I would like to hear your thoughts, but that's where I would start. Go and watch and listen and take notes of somebody who is more experienced than you and see what it is that they say, and then rehearse on your own.
Yeah. No, dude, it honestly kind of reminded me, like I started coaching when I was 18, I think. And it kind of reminded me of myself in like the first matches. I'm like, dude, I have no idea what to say at halftime right now. Like, okay, I'm just going to try and motivate them. A massive help for me, Gary, was going into the 3-4-3 coaching course and watching the full matches, listening to Brian's instructions during the game, but also at halftime, right? I'd watch his halftime speech like 10 times maybe and take notes on it. What is he saying? What is he identifying in the game for him to be able to spell that out on halftime, right? And that's another hard part is even if you can flow with your words, Gary, you still have to be able to identify the right moments in the game. For example, if your left back is getting torched every time, maybe you need to have better specific instructions for him. Or if the other team's, you know, right back is shocking, maybe it's like, hey, let's start on the right side, switch the point of attack, and let's continue to go at him. But if you're just starting out as a coach, it's hard to identify those moments because you really get caught up in the game. And it's like back and forth, and your mind is all over the place. It's hard to identify three or four moments to say, hey, this is how we can be better. You know, now let me go and communicate that with my team.
Very difficult. Very, and I don't think there's any shortcut to developing that skill. I think that actually is a huge function of experience. But one key thing that you, in my opinion, is critical to be able to decode what's happening in a match and then make adjustments. The key thing is that you yourself have to have a very specific coaching methodology, a very specific identity and style of play, because that is what gives you as a coach a framework and a lens through which to analyze what is actually happening and then how to correct it. Because you also can't, if you don't have that, Benny, then your brain is a bunch of spaghetti that's all over the place. And you can't zoom in and hone into, okay, what's broken right now? And then how do I fix it? And even if you can zoom in and what's broken and how do you fix it, if your players have not been trained in a very specific methodology of yours, then when you try to implement the fix, you've never trained it. And so how are your players going to even be able to implement what it is that you're telling them to implement at halftime to fix the problem? You with me? Like you can verbally tell them, oh, hey, Johnny, I don't even know, like double team this guy or whatever. They don't even know how to double team because you never even trained it.
Right.
You know, or hey, to your center back or your center backs, delay them. You know, don't get stuck in. Don't overcommit. Let them dribble at you. Just backpedal, let them come at you. That'll delay their attack so that everybody else can recover. They understand that. It makes sense. And everybody in our audience is like, oh, okay, that makes sense. What's the problem? Like the center back will just do what you told them to do at halftime. No, it doesn't work that way, especially not at the youth level. They don't understand that. They don't. If you never trained it, because it's not part of your methodology, they don't know how to backpedal when a player's running at them. They don't know how to body position themselves to say, oh, he's left-footed. Let's make him go right while I'm backpedaling just in case he tries to dribble past me. They don't know how far away you need to be. You know, is it 3 yards? Is it 2 yards? Is it 10 yards? You know, they have no clue if you haven't trained it. So even if you can decode what is broken and how to fix it, your players won't be able to implement the fix.
No, Gary, even in the game that I was observing, again, they're 7-year-old kids, right? But for example, right, you just said if you haven't trained them on concepts, they're not going to understand. Like, there was a free kick, and one of the kids was like, way offsides, but we're basically like standing by the goalie, right? the young coach is like, hey, you know, Johnny, you're offsides. They're like, come back on sides, you know? And Johnny's over there. He's like, okay, but like not moving at all because he doesn't understand what offsides is, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even at halftime, the coach could have, and again, you shouldn't wait till halftime to teach your players what offsides is at that young age. Like, we should probably have been working on it at training. But again, it just goes to show you, like, you need to work through these situations and moments with your team so that they have a good understanding of it, right? Obviously, as they get older, it's higher level concepts. It's not talking or working about offsides, but at the younger ages, dude, I mean, you have to walk them through everything. Because, Gary, there's thousands of moments that we don't realize exist in the game until they show up on the weekend. And it's like, oh, shit, we need to work on that now. Or, oh, throw-ins, or, you know, indirect set piece. The kids have no idea. It's like you're screaming at them and they're 8 years old. It's like you have to touch it twice and they have no idea what it means, bro. You know, so many things.
No, and this goes in direct contradiction. I mean, if anybody out there is hearing it, like not our audience, but our soccer mainstream customer base or fan base or whatever it is you want to call it, they've also been programmed so hard with this idea of just let the kids play. You can't have it both ways. Which one do you want? Do you want to just let the kids play, or do you want them to have a coach and be coached? It's one or the other, right? Because if the idea is just to let them play and the game is the best teacher sort of thing, all the stuff that we've just been discussing is pure nonsense. Like, what we've been discussing is coaching, actually teaching the kids. So if you're one of these just let the kids play sort of thing, what are you doing paying thousands of dollars to be on a team with a coach? I mean, it makes zero sense at that point. Why are you paying? And just like how we were talking about winning at all costs and it comes from the parents and they'll stab you in the back immediately if you're not winning, you know, and they've always advocated for not winning is, or winning is not that important. They'll do the same thing. If you let the kids play and you don't actually coach, guess what's going to happen? The parents are going to revolt against you and say, fuck this. My kid needs to be with somebody who's going to actually coach them. But it's weird, but it's interesting. So you're stuck in a no-win situation, because then if you are coaching them, right, all the time, or you're teaching them and doing all the stuff that we advocate, then you have everybody on your ass because, oh, you're overcoaching. You should let them do whatever the fuck they want. And you can't win, Ben. You can't win. The only way to win is if you actually win games, because then nobody can tell you anything.
Sure. Yeah, you're in. Even the example I gave you, the young coach, like I said, the team is winning all the games. So what did the parents think? Oh, well, this kid is great. This guy's a good coach. You
know? No, and it's a pitfall in the context of coaching development, which is what this episode is about. That's a massive pitfall. If you're a new coach and you get a team that has just enough raw talent that you're going to win no matter what. It could be my grandma coaching it. It could be an AI coaching it. It could be anybody coaching it. And they're going to win all the games or win a majority of the games. It's a huge pitfall because then the coach actually thinks it's them that's causing the team to win. And so they start thinking that whatever it is that they're doing is the right thing to do. And then they go down that path of continuing to do those sorts of things. And next thing you know, 5 years have gone by and they're a shocking coach. And at some point, reality's going to bitch slap them because they actually are a shocking coach. So the moment they get a mediocre team or less than mediocre team, they can't improve them. They can't win. They can't do anything. Reality smacks them in the face and they never kind of recover because they don't want to admit that, oh shit, everything I've been doing for the past 5 years, I've been lying to myself. Like it's nonsense. Like I have to retrain and start from ground zero. Who wants to start from ground zero, Benny? Nobody wants to start from ground zero. And so we have a huge coaching population in this country that fits exactly what I just described. Huge, huge. And you'll see a lot of them in our YouTube comments or Instagram comments or X posts. You see a whole bunch of them. And you see a whole bunch of them saying all this nonsense on social media because they are that coach, Ben. They are that coach. They won all these games and had nothing to do with them that they won all these games. And so they think they actually know. And so they're the ones saying, oh, Rondos aren't directional. That's bullshit or whatever. Okay, what methodology do you have? Because they won't offer what their methodology is. They don't have one, actually. It's literally just like, oh, get the best players and let them fucking solve the problem.
Yeah. Oh, Gary, it's actually a kind of a good idea. It might be a good strategy for a new coach to develop at a faster rate is to get the worst team possible, bro. Go find a flight three team or flight two team, a mid team where they're going to have to compete every weekend, right? It's not just a guaranteed win. Because I'll tell you, Gary, I feel like I've learned way more in the lower level teams that I've coached than the top teams that I've coached, right? Because there's a lot more coaching involved. Like, for example, the top level teams, there's things that you don't have to say to them that they already know how to do, right? It's just kind of a given. They understand the game at a higher level and they can just execute things without even saying it as a coach. And then you get this false sense of identity that, oh, wow, like I am a phenomenal coach. Like, look at us. We just won three tournaments in a row. Bro, my grandma could have been coaching the game and they'll still win, bro. You know, versus if you have a team that's at the bottom of the table and you don't have the most athletic players, you actually have to go in there and work on the small details of the game and have a game plan and execute it, right? Have a methodology and work on it week after week and you'll start seeing improvements, bro.
Totally, totally. Oh man, so much to discuss around this topic. Everything you just said reminds me of Marcelo Bielsa again, because here in the United States in particular, for years, some of the sentiment has changed a little bit, but for years, forever, first off, they didn't even know who Marcelo Bielsa was until maybe like 10 years ago. And then he started entering the conversation in large part because we kind of forced it too, but not just us, obviously, but they would always say like, oh, Marcelo Bielsa has no trophies. Like what the fuck has he ever won? You know what I mean? He's never won the Premier League. He's never won La Liga. He's never won Serie A. He's never won League One in France. He's never, wherever he's coached, he's never really won the title at the club level. And at the international level, the only thing he won was the Olympics with Argentina, but he didn't win the World Cup. He didn't win, you know, big trophies. He didn't win big trophies with Chile either. And so just like the parents, the fan base and media here are like, Marcelo Bielsa, total mid-manager, like, and never even coached like the big teams and stuff. But I'm connecting it to what you said, because he has said himself that in many respects, he likes grabbing the mid to low level teams and just making them outperform like they've never performed before, versus inheriting Real Madrid or Barcelona or Manchester United back in the day, or a Man City nowadays, or a Liverpool nowadays, or a, you know what I mean? Or a Juve or something like that. He's gotten the lower level teams and he's made them skyrocket from whatever they've done historically, whether it be Atletico Bilbao, whether it be obviously Chile, his work was remarkable. His work with Leeds, taking them, you know, from the Championship to the Premier League, back to the Premier League. And the people there in Leeds absolutely worship him, and they didn't want him to go. And when he got let go because they had a string of bad results, the fan base still idolizes the guy. He's a genius. He's the best. Pep says he's the best. All the big managers say he's the best, and it's for a reason, Ben. Trophies don't tell you who is the best.
Yep, and you're right. No, a lot of people will look at the stat sheet, bro, and look at, oh, what is he? What major tournament has he won? Nothing. This guy sucks, bro. It's like, you have no idea, bro.
So sad. So sad. I feel bad for the youth coaches here, because youth coaches here, the parents, they'll just be like, what have you done? You're not coaching MLS Next or ECNL. Okay, you must not be that good then. It has nothing to do with it. It has zero to do with coaching capability. Zero.
Yeah. Oh, Benny, you don't have your A license? Fuck you, Benny.
So bad, man. So bad. Why would I go get an A license, pay $10,000, put in 150 hours of work for a piece of paper? Retarded.
Yeah. Some people weren't too happy with you saying that, Gary, but those are probably the same people that invested all the money into 100%. The course.
100%. 100%. Who wants to hear that all the tens of thousands of dollars that they spend, all the time, energy, and effort and stuff, and to get the piece of paper is fucking stupid and they got scammed? nobody's going to look back. It takes a very special human being to look back and say, like, yeah, I got scammed. Fuck yeah, I learned from it.
Right. Yeah, no, most people won't admit that, Gareth. So, Gary, continuing with coaching development, it's one thing to have a good understanding of the game, to have a tactical understanding, and you can even be a master session planner, right, and run great sessions, but how do you get buy-in from the players, Gary? And it reminds me of a video that tactical manager just posted, like on the differences of Pochettino and Berhalter. And one of the clips is Pochettino like ripping the team at halftime, or maybe it was after the game, like absolutely kind of ripping the guys and giving a passionate speech.
Okay, that is not soccer. Soccer is called there all together, like in the last 15 minutes, that we start to run and be connected. We didn't talk. That is the example that we didn't talk. Because in the way that we concede, I didn't listen because it was dead.
And then like it cuts to Berhalter, like pre-game, he's like, how do whoops hunt, guys? Like, we hunt and pack. You know what I mean?
My mind, actually, the last 3 days, right, was when that zoo guy was talking about the African dogs, man, and how they hunt. Remember how they hunt? They hunt as a pack. And they don't stop, man. They keep running until their prey falls down in exhaustion, and then they go for the kill. Tonight, we are dogs. We sick the dogs. Are you ready?
Let's go.
On three, USA, boys.
Just, like, fucking cringe. And the players are kind of looking around like, what, you know, they're like, okay, yeah, like, but you can tell they weren't as bought in with and how they are with Pochettino, you know? And I think that's a big part of a success of a team and a coach. So what's the best way for a coach to get buy-in from their players?
Yeah, I would, man, I think one common thing, no matter what level you're at, is obviously have the players love you. You have to develop a intimate relationship like that so that they'll actually go to war for you and run through a wall for you and do anything that you ask of them, and then to trust you wholly and completely. So if you don't start them in a particular game or you sub them out later in the game or something like that, that they still feel like, okay, Benny knows what's best for the team, knows what's best for me. He has my best interest in heart as well, even though it might sting that I'm not starting this game or something. It's all for the greater good. So you have to have that level of trust from them. But how do you gain that trust? I think you gain that trust by them feeling that you, one, know what the fuck you're doing. And that comes in many form factors. One form factor is your reputation precedes you. So you have a lot of experience and a reputation already. And so the parents already know who you are and what you've accomplished. And that kind of filters down to the kids from day one, right? The kids are already going into this situation thinking, oh, this coach is supposedly a fucking badass coach. That's one possibility. The other possibility or thing to do is, you know, when you're actually coaching them, they get a sense that you actually know football. And that changes depending on age level, and it changes depending on playing level, of course, because the younger they are and the lower the level and lower experience the coach has to be for the kids to actually believe that you know what you're talking about, right? Because if you get the coach that you just described, the John Doe first year coach, and you put him into a U15 or U17 situation with the best players in the country playing at the highest competitive level in the country, they're going to look at the coach that you just described and they're going to be like, bro, this fool's a tool. No, get the fuck. No respect. Zero respect. So he's never going to get buy-in, Benny. I think those two are huge factors. And they also have to smell that you actually care and want what's best for them. All three of those things could be mutually exclusive, right? You might be able to care a whole lot and want what's best for them, but not have the capability to fulfill the potential. You know what I mean? Or you might care and all that stuff, but you have no reputation also. Oh, the other thing that's important, Benny, is you have to win again. If you aren't winning, then man, it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe in your leader if you aren't winning matches. I don't know if that helps, dude. It's all those ingredients.
No, Darian, while you were saying that, kind of backtracking to another topic, the hard part for parents on discerning whether their coach is good or not is, if you think about it, the parents really don't hear the instructions that they're given at training. Maybe they're watching from afar and maybe they see what they're doing, but they don't actually hear what the coach is saying. They don't hear the pregame talk. They don't hear the halftime talk or the postgame talk. And so what's their only metric in determining if this coach is good or not, right? Are they winning or not, you know? So, and then they have to rely on the kid communicating what the coach is. Like, I guarantee you almost every parent after games is like, hey, what did coach say at halftime? Or what did he tell you when he pulled off the field? And now you have to rely on a 10-year-old to relay this information to you that's probably not going to be accurate, you know? So again, I know this is for coaching development, but for parents, it's hard to discern who is a good coach out there. That's why I think parents should be a little bit more involved, not like fucking overbearing and at the session, like at the half line and like super close so that they can hear. But I mean, if it was me, I would want to hear what the coach is saying to my kid, you know?
For sure. Well, that's why they should join the master class, dude. Join the master class and they'll... No, but that's the whole purpose of the master class, Benny, is to try to develop the parent's eyeball and level of discernment for them to then take that into the real world and be like, okay, is Benny a good coach? And how good of a coach is Benny? They're not going to get it right, but they'll have a better scale, a better barometer for judgment beyond the win-loss column. Because everybody, I know parents, think of the number of parents that I've been exposed to, hundreds, thousands, I don't even know. They go through their entire kid's youth trajectory from U10 to aging now and going to college. And they still, their only barometer is still the win-loss column. They never escaped it. Never, not once. And they take that to their fandom of the game as well. So if they're fans of the game, which in one respect, they probably are, because their kid's been playing soccer their whole life. So they probably watched Champions League, or they probably watched the Premier League, or they probably watched some MLS or go to MLS matches with the kid and stuff. They take that to that arena and they also look at the stats, the win-loss column, and, you know, who are the better players? Oh, obviously the better players are the ones that, you know, got purchased, or obviously the ones who are the starters, or, you know what I mean? Like they never get to layer two then. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, in most cases, Gary, I think as coaches, we can't expect them to get to that level. You know, a lot of parents just want their kids to play and have friends and go to pizza parties. You know, like they're not going to invest time and effort into studying the game. And you know what I mean? Like for a lot of parents, it's just like, oh, fuck, this is a nice break from watching my kid. Or else, you know what I mean?
Totally. But it does kind of contradict many, if not most of them, in the sense that they do become activists or engaged, you know, and in the discussion, like they want what's best, obviously, for their kid. So yeah. You can't have it both ways also, where it's like, well, I want the best possible soccer education for my kid, and I want them to fulfill their potential in soccer, and I want them to maybe get a college scholarship, or I want them to, you know what I mean, or be on the varsity team in high school, or I want them to become a pro. So they have that mental model. And at the same time, they want to like not do the things that you just described, right? They want to not invest time, energy, and effort. And you can't, you have, if you want to be able to fulfill the kid's potential and guide them and mentor them the proper way, you have to learn about the freaking game.
Yeah. It's sad, dude, because I've come across and worked with a lot of great parents, Gary. But even today I was observing a game that was going on right next to me. And bro, they were little kids. And both the mom and the dad, like let's say the kid's name is Johnny, like every play, bro, it's Johnny step, Johnny drop, like Johnny, what are you doing? Or Johnny, wake up. Like at one point the mom was, she's like, Johnny, no mistakes. Like, what are you talking about here? Yeah. You know, I wanted to like say like after the game, like, listen, in 2 or 3 years, your kid's going to quit soccer because you guys are fucking ruining the game for him. But not my place to say it, you know, but I just wish, I don't know, I wish parents could like get out of their bubble and just look further down the line and see like, dude, you're actually fucking up your kid's development by doing that. Anyways, yeah. I know this is about coaches, but I was pissed, dude. I was like, fuck, dude, I feel bad for this kid. He's going to end up quitting, I guarantee it.
Yeah, it's rough, man. It's rough. Imagine, again, I always draw this metaphor. Imagine if you're a school teacher at any level, doesn't matter what, and the parents are in the audience while you're teaching the class. You know what I mean? And the kids have to do activities in the class, maybe go up on the board and solve a problem or give a little presentation or whatever. And imagine if the parents in the audience are yelling at their kid or murmuring and yelling at the teacher. Like, this is the type of environment you're in. I understand it's a different arena. Sports is a competitive thing. And I like the rowdiness of the sidelines. And I want the parents to be involved and be passionate. I want that sort of atmosphere. And I think it helps the kids in that sort of way, but not to the degree that you just described, where it's focused on one kid and it's constant over and over and over again in every single match. It's like, that's a disaster, Benny. Be passionate about the team and cheer and all that, but oof, you have to know when to do what and when not to do what.
Yeah, dude. And there's a time and place for it for sure. Like, I like when the parents are cheering and fucking get loud when they score. But even this dad, bro, he's like calling out other kids, bro. He's like, George, you're the center back. What are you doing? And like, how is the coach allowing this to happen, bro? But again, the coach is probably new and has no idea. Like, no, this shouldn't be happening. I don't know.
Yeah. Remember a few episodes back, you asked me, hey, Gary, what's one positive thing? Can you say one positive thing about what's happened in youth soccer here in this country? I think we were talking about how U.S. soccer really screwed over youth soccer when they formed the U.S. Soccer Development Academy in 2007. And then MLS next, when U.S. soccer gave them, you know, shut it down and gave MLS full control of the top tier of youth soccer, that even worsened youth soccer even more. And all of that is true, guys. All of it is true. It's fucking a disaster. It's gotten worse over the past almost 20 years. And you asked me, hey, Gary, is there one positive thing you can say? And I struggled mightily. Here's one, I just thought of one. Here's one positive thing that they did do. They made the parents sit on the opposite side of the coaches and the players' bench where all the activity is happening. They said, nope, parents on that side, technical staff, players on this side. That was a good decision.
Yeah. Well, sadly, it doesn't happen everywhere, though, you know, because there's still a lot of leagues and games where one team sits on one side, the other team sits on the other side, and all the parents are right next to the bench. And, you know, the kids, when they come off the field, they come to their mom first or their dad to get a quick advice from them. I wish they'd implement that everywhere, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good, man. It's really good. There should be a line that's drawn. I was going to say, it was also good because at the MLS franchises, obviously we were at Chivas USA for a number of years. And then we were at the LA Galaxy for a number of years. And at those spots, principally the Galaxy, the parents weren't even allowed to be in training either. It's like the kids get dropped off, you go train, and parents are outside the fence. Like, you don't come into training. You don't pitch your lawn chair on the touchline and watch the training session, and they're right there with the kid and the kids and the coach. No, fuck all that shit too. So I would say that's also a very big positive, although I hesitate to say making it widespread, because then that goes against how do parents discern whether they're getting good coaching or not.
Yeah, that's true. That's tough. Man. Gary, how do you coach the star player on the team? Every team, every coach has their top two guys or their top one guy. Do you show them more love or less love? Do you coach them more because they have the most potential? Or do you focus on the other players because they need more work? How do you find that balance? And again, if this person is the best person on your team, right, you want to do everything that you can to keep them on your team, right? Because we've talked about what happens when the best player leaves a team. Well, everybody's going to follow them. So how do you go about the star players on your team? You know, should they get the most attention from the coach, or should it be balanced in everybody?
Yeah, it depends. It depends. Two things come immediately to mind. The first is you treat everybody different. That's going to trigger some people. What do you mean you treat everybody? Everybody should be treated the same. There's a unifying principle where you treat everybody the same. You treat everybody with respect. You treat everybody the same in the sense that you want everybody to develop to their maximum potential. There are a lot of commonalities that is the same throughout the entire group. But you don't treat everyone the same in the sense that every player has a different set of needs and has a different psychology or psychological profile associated with them. So what you can say to one player, you can't say to the other, because what motivates one player will demotivate the other. So you have to be a psychologist then and delineate, okay, these are my two or three star players or my one star player. What do I do with this guy? Well, first and foremost, unlike the weakest player on the team, you need the star player to remain on the team, to be happy, to feel like they are getting everything that they need to fulfill their potential. You need that more than you need it from the lower player. This is just a fact. And it is a fact also rooted in business, because as we explained at the beginning of the episode, this is a business. And if you want to stay in business, and if it's your livelihood, if you want to keep your job, you have to win. And if you need to win, you need good players. And if you need good players, you need to have your star player be happy, Ben. So you have to cater to your star player. This is just an inevitable thing. And for all you folks out there who are triggered at this moment and like, oh, see, you're part of the problem, playing favorites and all that stuff. Hey, if they're not happy, guess what's going to happen? What you said, the player's going to leave where they're going to be, quote unquote, treated better than they currently are. And the team starts losing or losing even more games than they were already losing. The whole team ends up disbanding or you lose your job. So I'm sorry, folks, but this is the real world that we live in. And your best player, your star player needs to be happy. So are you going to focus in on their needs a lot or potentially a lot more? Yes, you are. On the bright side, since they're your star player and the best player, they also don't need as much guidance, you know, because they're that good, Benny. They're that good. So I don't need to sit there and say, oh, this is how you kick a soccer ball. You know what I mean? Versus the other guy. So if you want your team to improve, you need to improve the mid-tier and the lower-tier players up to at least a minimum level of competency, which will complement and help your better player too. So it is a balance, like you said, and it comes down to whether you as a coach can decode what is needed. But do you baby the star players? Yes, but to a point, man, to a point. Luckily, say like Brian, you have this big reputation, right? You were at an MLS franchise, two MLS franchises, where your star player is not going to leave because they can't leave. Where are they going to go? If you're at the LA Galaxy or LAFC or what was formerly Chivas USA, where's your star player going to go? It's not that easy. Where are you going to go? You're going to go to 8 hours north to San Jose? Okay, that's going to require a whole family movement, and it's going to require the thumbs up and the okay of the franchise that you're currently at, because you don't have just freedom of movement. You don't have freedom of movement. They basically own you. So with that sort of luxury, you don't have to baby your player. And that's my big pet peeve also with a lot of these MLS franchise coaches nowadays. You don't have to baby your players. You can be hard on them. And Brian was hard on the top players to try to forge their mentality, to make their mentality stronger. Because if their next step is to be a professional or to reach the next higher level, if they're a bitch who's always been coddled, then they're going to fold. They're going to fold so hard when they reach the pro level and they're sitting on the bench and they can't tolerate. It's been 6 months. They barely get any minutes. They just fold. And the parents are going to fold too. So what if you're not there? What if you're at the lower level? You're John Doe coach. Okay, he's got a star player. You're going to have to baby them, man. Yeah. You're going to have to put your arm around them and say, you're awesome. You're the best thing ever. We're best friends, you know, on and on and on. And you better tread very carefully if you want to do what I just described, which is developing their mental fortitude by being hard on them. You're going to have to really be careful.
Right. Let me give you two examples, Gary. And let's say, again, we're not talking about MLS Academy or Youth Academy.
Okay.
The first example, and actually this ties into a comment that somebody asked us, is like, okay, what if your star player plays another sport? And he misses one day of training. Let's say he trained 3 times a week. He misses one day of training, but he's still a clear cut above the rest of the players, right? Do you still start him? Do you still give him 90 minutes, right?
Yes. Yes. You start them, but you also start working the parents and start working the kid with communication. Like, hey, man, like you can probably go far in the game. I'm giving an example. You can probably go far in the game, but you know, you want to dedicate yourself a little bit more. So try to go all in on soccer. I believe in you. You should do it. I know you like the other sport too, but this is your baby. Also, be a good role model to the other players who are not as good as you. Show your commitment, show your discipline. Like, I'm going off the cuff, Ben, but if you want to correct that action, you have to start working the parents and start working the kid. And hopefully over the course of time, they come around and they're like, okay, I'm not missing training anymore. It's very difficult. I'm not saying it's easy.
Yeah.
But you can't just, I'm saying you just can't let it slide, right?
Yeah, for sure. Well, the guy's question, and maybe, I don't know if the players he's referring to are the star players on the team, but his question is, you know, what are your thoughts on young players playing multiple sports? I think he says at age 14, but let's just take it in general.
Yeah.
Are you good with that, Gary? Like playing different sports? Or I personally think if you play another sport, you're not going to make it in soccer, bro. I mean, I'm sure there's exceptions. I'm sure kids have played multiple sports and still went on to play pro, but 99% of players, bro, if you don't dedicate all of your time to your one main sport, I don't think you're making it, bro.
Yeah. So it comes down to the ultimate objective. Is your ultimate objective to be a pro? If it is, okay, what caliber of pro? Do you want to play Champions League? Do you want to be in a World Cup? You know, there's different strata associated with it. Do you want to be at that top level? Or next level is, oh, maybe you don't play World Cups or Champions League, but you play in Europe. Or next level is, okay, maybe you don't play in Europe, you play in MLS. Or next level of pro is like, okay, you don't make MLS, but at least you're playing in USL. Sort of thing. So like, what is the ultimate objective, right? And you work backwards from there. So if that's the ultimate objective, and we're talking U14 and up or something like that, bro, if you're playing multiple sports, you're done. It's over. Forget it. Just forget it. Just forget it, man. You said there might be an outlier here or there. I might get an angry comment on YouTube. Oh, Gary, look at this guy over here. Shut the fuck up. Okay. Shut the fuck up. The kid's not making it, so I'm against multi-sport playing in that context. Now, if the ultimate objective is not that, and it's something that, I don't know, it's not that hard to achieve, or even lower than that, where it's just like, this is, I just want to play because I like it, you know, and it's cool, you know, but I don't dream of getting a scholarship and playing Division I soccer, college soccer. If it's something like that, which is like 90% of the population, if I'm being sincere and honest, I don't give a fuck. Go play your other sport. Who gives a fuck? So long as it doesn't interfere with our team schedule and our, you know, in our matches where you're missing matches or you don't come to training, if it doesn't interfere, go have fun, play your fucking, I don't know, lacrosse or water polo or whatever the fuck it is that you're doing. All good with me. And if it is interfering, okay, well, now it comes down to how good is this kid? Do I really need him on the team? And I start thinking about those sorts of things. And then you make a decision there too, you know?
Yeah. So the other example I was going to give you, Gary, is let's say your star player, he's still the best player on the team. He's levels ahead of everybody, but his attitude at training is fucking shocking, right? Doesn't listen, poor body language, disrespects the coach, shows up whatever he wants. The parents know that he's the best, so I'm going to show up, you know, 15 minutes late to training, or very poor attitude, not a good teammate. Do you still start him?
Well, and what level is this?
I don't know. Let's just say club soccer, anywhere from U10 to U18.
But are we talking like MLS franchise or ignore that?
No, fuck MLS. Yeah, fuck MLS. Dude.
Okay.
Let's talk about the 98% of the country, bro.
Got it. Again, context dependent. Do I need this job? Do I need it? I think it ultimately comes down to that too. Because if you just fuck the kid off, does that destroy the team and does that get you fired? I don't know. The first thing I would probably do is speak to leadership of the club or whoever is in charge of my paycheck and say, hey, listen, coming for advice. This is my situation. You know, what do you think we should do or I should do? You loop them in and then you try to come to a consensus on a course of action together with leadership, one way or the other. Yeah. And so long as you have that sort of support and that sort of understanding, whichever way you want to take it is fine by me. If you want to get rid of the kid, because that would be my inclination. If this is just a whatever team that's never going to accomplish anything, the players are never going to get anywhere, and this star player that you have is actually just a mid player anyways, not a real top level player. Otherwise, you wouldn't be on your team, right, Benny? They're not going to go anywhere. So who fucking cares? Get rid of the kid. We don't want a disrespectful little cunt, you know, on the team. Get out of here.
Yeah. No, but Gary, what if this, without this kid, you lose every game? With the kid, you guys are winning.
Okay. So
you're not going to be so fast to fucking cut him out, no?
No, right? No. Yeah, no. You don't make rash decisions, but you try to take corrective action and hopefully the situation gets better. But also imagine, Benny, if 3 months have gone by and the situation has not gone better at all.
Mm.
So maybe another contingency plan is you try to start figuring out if you could get another player or two on there that are strong players. I don't know when the registration windows are open, if you have recruiting power or anything. I don't know. That's why it's so context dependent, right? But I would be looking for replacements such that you don't lose every game if this guy bounces. Just like any employer would. Oh, I have a bad employee here. Okay, you don't really get rid of the employee right away because maybe you can't fill their shifts up, you know, with somebody else. You have no replacement. So what do? You go and find a replacement first, and then you fire the son of a bitch.
Yeah. I'm wondering, Gary, if you were the coach, would you attempt to like try to change this kid's mindset and like fix his attitude? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like try and have like a because if a kid is acting like that, bro, there's obviously other stuff going on or other factors at home. Maybe, you know, he's not just going to act out just to be a dick because he wants to. I mean, maybe there's something going on at home, you know? So
yeah, the number one tool obviously is playing time for these kids. Cause if they keep coming, it's cause they want to play.
Yeah.
They might have a bad attitude. They might talk back, be disrespectful, but they want to play. Otherwise they wouldn't come anymore, in my opinion. So the stick that you've got is playing time. So maybe, you don't start them and then, you know, pray for dear God that three goals don't get scored on you and you don't score any. And if one goal gets scored on you and you try to hold on as long as you can and keep it close, and then you throw the kid in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I would do.
Yeah. I know we're getting already past the hour mark, degree, but what are your thoughts on benching a kid for an entire game? Like people will hear that and say, what the fuck? No, like, how dare you? They're kids, you know, everybody should play. But are there ever moments when that could actually be a good thing? Like, you know, let's say you have a star player who, I don't know, starts having an attitude or hasn't been performing in the way that you want him to. And like, is it okay to quote unquote teach him a lesson? You know, sit him the whole game?
I think so.
Nothing wrong with it in your mind?
No, I think so. I don't know what kind of society we've gotten into, man, where it's like I don't get it, man. We've become so soft, Benny.
Yeah,
so soft. And I know you said forget the MLS franchise context or the pro player academy context, but that shit happens. I don't know because it's so soft here in the States. It probably doesn't happen outside of when Brian was running things over there. But you don't play. You didn't show up to training, or you were disrespectful, or you started a fight, or God knows what the situation, or God knows, right? You ain't playing. You're not playing. You want to play next week, next weekend? Okay, let's see how this week goes. Let's see what your attitude's like this week. Oh, same attitude? You don't play again. But for everybody else's context, Ben, you don't play the kid, dude. Again, get the backing of the leadership there. And obviously I would also be speaking to the parents at this point, especially if they're paying, and have a candid conversation with the parents. Hey, what's going on? What's going on with, Johnny's supposed to be the worst player on the team. What's the name for the best player on the team? Jose. Okay. What's going on with Jose? Why is Jose this way? Right. and then see if the parents can help, because they should be your biggest ally in this. I'm sure they don't want their kid to be disrespectful and bad behaved. Yeah. Whose parents want that?
Well, what if it's Gary? What if it's Johnny, and Johnny has a great attitude and it's a great teammate, but he's just levels behind? And I don't know. Let's say you're in the final. Like, are you cool with still benching him the entire game, even though his parents are paying $5,000?
Depends how important winning is, Benny.
So that's what it all comes down to. Huh?
It all comes down to that, man. It all comes down to that. And it's not our fault.
Yeah.
If you want to develop players to their greatest potential, you can't have the system that we have in the States. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Promotion, relegation. It always ends here, doesn't it, Gary?
Always, my friend. Always. Always. And it's so interesting that we have so many parallels now with the greater national conversation in the United States and globally speaking, where you've got folks that want to bring socialism into the picture and everybody's the same. And, you know, we should destroy capitalism and we should have closed markets and the government should control everything. And the government should, you know, dish out bread and flour and housing to everybody equally. And we should confiscate those who have stuff and give it to those who don't have stuff. And there's that segment. And then there's the segment that believes in meritocracy. And to have a legitimate meritocracy, you need an open ecosystem, an open competition of ideas. And it's no different in the specific niche ecosystem that is football. It's a business. How are we going to run this ecosystem? Is it going to be closed and monopolized where, quote unquote, one organization, one government dictates to everybody how everything needs to happen and who gets what and who are the winners and who are the losers? Or should it be open and let's see who wins this game of soccer and who loses this game of soccer? Let the cream rise to the top and the non-cream fall to the bottom. It's not a soccer thing, Benny. It's a humanity thing. That's why I don't care about football, Ben. I just don't care. Can you read? Do you have that email that I sent you moments ago? Because I want to end it here unless you have more to talk about. I want to address this email that I just got recently. And I get these emails with this sort of questioning all the time. And I kind of just want to have a little segment on the podcast where I address it. That way, when I get these emails, you know, next week and the week after that and the year after that, I can just send them to this moment in this podcast episode to respond. Save me a lot of time, energy, and effort.
Isn't the pay-to-play solution?
Yes. Can you read it? Obviously anonymized.
I feel like I'm not seeing the full email. Yeah, I don't see where he gives the situation because I only see where he says, I apologize for reaching out cold, but I have a project.
That one. Yeah, just read that little segment. That's fine.
No, but it says nothing else. I mean, it just says, have listened to your podcast and feel this project could be a solution. I don't see where he shares the podcast. I mean, the project.
Well, he doesn't. That's my whole point, Ben. So okay. Here, I'll read it.
Okay.
So it says, Gary, my name is so-and-so. I've tried to reach out to you over Instagram and text, and I got your number from a friend. I apologize for reaching out cold, but have a project I am currently doing and want to share it with you. I have listened to your podcast and feel this project could be a solution to many of the issues shared on your podcast and what I have found in the youth soccer landscape. If you had a minute to chat, I think it would be something you would be interested in. Please feel free to reach out. And he gives his phone number and, you know, closes it there. So look, first off, if somebody's going to cold email communicate, anybody, not just me, anybody who's kind of busy and has stuff going on, don't keep it ambiguous. Like you said nothing. Tell me what you said nothing. You're like, I think you're going to be interested in my project. You know, give me a call. Bro, what the fuck are we doing? Okay. Tell me exactly what you're doing. Don't write me a Shakespearean novel because I'm not going to read it. This should be 3 or 4 sentences maximum. Okay. What is it specifically? And just say, hey, man, if you ever want to get in touch or something, here's my contact info. The end, you know? Don't say, hey, I think you'd be interested in my project. What are we talking about?
Well, Gary, that's why I was confused because I'm like, well, there's no solution or anything here. Like, what am I missing, bro?
Yeah. So just just so folks know, I usually try to respond to as much people as possible, but there are certain boundaries I won't cross. So I know I'm not going to hop on a call or a Zoom or anything for brain picking. Like, oh, Gary, you're very smart. I like what you have to say. I like to pick your brain about certain things or whatever. Like, what do I get out of it? But let's be real. I'll say if you're gonna cold communicate with somebody, make sure that you're offering something actually, and not just take. Oh, Gary, I'd like to pick your brain to see what it is that you know. Basically, hey, I want you to be my consultant for free, and you don't know who I am. It's not gonna happen. Nobody in their right mind is going to respond to this. So sincerely with all respect, because I feel bad and I want to talk to people and I want to communicate and I want to form relationships and I want to expand the community and stuff, but there's a way to go about these things. And this is not the way to go about these things. And I'll also say the following. I said it many times on the podcast. I don't give a shit about soccer. I could give a fuck about soccer. So if you tell me, oh, Gary, I'm starting a insert soccer related project here, like a free to play academy here, or pick up a game service over there, or a person. I don't care. I don't care about soccer. I don't care. The mission here is beyond the scope of soccer. It's about general principles, Benny. I don't care. We have a coaching education program. Great. I do care about educating coaches, educating people, teaching people, giving people tools, you know, for them to go out into the world and do good stuff. Yes, we have a parent education program for the same reasons, but I don't care about soccer. Soccer just happens to be the proxy through which to express our ideas through. That's all.
I'm going to make that last 3 minutes an audiogram right there, bro.
Brilliant.
Oh, man, good stuff, dude. Yeah, I was confused. I'm like, well, what? I think I'm missing part of the email here, Gary, because I don't see anything. This guy just says, oh, yeah, give me a call.
Yeah.
I'm like, why did...
you're not going to entice me into soccer-related things, honestly. If you shout out and say, hey, Gary, look, dude, we're going to... I don't even know. I don't even know what would entice me, to be honest, because I'm too busy with my own projects and our own sort of things where it's going to have to be something outrageously monumental to get my head to turn. And I'm not being arrogant. I'm just being sincere. This is just reality. If an MLS franchise called me up, hey, Gary, we want you to be the general manager, blah, blah, blah. That I don't care. I'm not going to go be your general manager, FC Dallas. I could give two shits about being the general manager of an MLS franchise. Oh, Gary, we want you to come and do, you know, be our data analytics expert for New York City FC. I could give a fuck. I'm not doing that.
What if Elon Musk emails you, Gary?
The very different story. I'm dropping everything.
Oh, man. I hope you do that one, do you hear? You told me you want to help civilization get to Mars. So I hope you're part of that one, dude.
The goal here, I don't know if people know my background. They could Google if they want. But the goal here, Benny, is, I've said it a million times, is to develop you and develop others, or develop others. Depends if you want it or you don't want it. Other people to take over the main operation and mission of 343. You know, keep all the members happy, continue to expand the program, continue to expand the footprint of the media, you know, the education, to the point where I can kind of be seriously hands off and I can go and do hardcore science, hardcore engineering. Again, I'm still involved in science and engineering, but not to the degree that, you know, last time we met would be cool. Elon's getting to Mars. SpaceX is getting to Mars. And I'm like, shit, what am I fucking doing here? Talking to soccer parents and coaches. What the fuck is this? No, I need to go work on the new propulsion system or the next iteration of guidance, navigation, and control or whatever, anything.
Yeah. Build something.
All right.
Good stuff, dude. I better get home before my girl kills me, dude.
All right, brother. I will stop recording here. Thanks, Benny. And yeah, I guess it will just upload right away because you're at school.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.